Recordings are started.
Thank you so much, sir. And with that, we can start this call number 80 of the CCWG on the 26th of January 2016. We would like to do the roll call as we usually do by taking the list from the remote participation room. So please, for those who are on the audio bridge only, please do speak up. I heard Jordan stating that he's only on the audio bridge, so we add Jordan to the list. Anyone else?
Thomas, Cheryl here. I will be joining the IC, but I'm not here yet.
Thanks very much, Cheryl. We will add you to the list. Any further attendees only on the audio bridge? That doesn't seem to be the case. Then the next question, as usual, is whether there are any updates to statements of interest.
Yeah, this is Sean. I'm audio only. This is Sean. Thank you.
Hi, Sean. We will add you to the list. Welcome. And there don't seem to be any updates to statements of interest. Before we move to the first substantive item, let me just briefly respond to the discussion that is going on in the chat on the order of the agenda items in today's agenda. Let me first explain for everyone's benefit why we suggested the change. That is because Leon had an urgent meeting that he needed to attend, and since he was sharing all the human rights related parts of the agenda earlier, we wanted to make it possible for him to join. However, as you will remember, before we started this intense work phase, we said that it should be predictable for everyone if and when we have discussions on certain topics. And in order to maintain that predictability, we will now move back to the agenda as originally suggested to the group. So you don't need to rearrange your days or nights in the light of the suggested agenda change, which is herewith withdrawn. That allows us to move to the next agenda item, and that is an update on the chartering organization's input. That's going to be done by Mathieu.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Mathieu Vey speaking, the CCNSO appointed co-chair, and welcome everyone to this call number 80. I am delighted to report, as you've seen on the list, that we have received the remaining two chartering organizations' feedbacks ahead of this call. The GNSO and the GAC have provided very substantial inputs. And the goal of this agenda item is a short review to ensure we have a clear view of their feedbacks, concerns, endorsements. I think the number one news is that there is no formal objection from any of these two organizations. There is indeed some qualified support and some concerns expressed, even within each of these groups. Some objections are noted. They are consistent with the minority views that were expressed at the time of the publication of our third report, as well as with the comments we had received in the public comment period. And I think you will, I hope we can conclude by the end of this agenda item that we are already working on the concerns that were raised. And to introduce this discussion, I will move through the various recommendations of our report and focus on the concerns only, or the conditions or the qualifications for support that we have received from the GAC and GNSO, and so that we can share a common view of what the feedbacks from these two chartering organizations are. So I will not spend any time on the recommendations that are not drawing any significant concern and actually generally supported. So with regards to recommendation one, to start with, the GAC has not reached a formal or final position on being a decisional participant, but is reminding us of its previous inputs from December, but also September, in participating to the escalation process. Within the GNSO, there is some opposition noted on the basis of the balance between SO and ACs and the shift of balance that our proposal would introduce. And there is also an express condition for further support of recommendation one to include extra transparency measures. And that's precisely what we've been working at on recommendation one. So that's for recommendation one. Recommendation two is globally supported. Recommendation three, we have GNSO support with qualification. The qualification is about the need to clarify the process to update the articles of incorporations. That's been our work so far on recommendation three. As far as recommendation four is concerned, we have GNSO support with qualifications as well. That's about shielding community participants from director litigation in the case of board removal, and fixing the escalation timeframes issues. So precisely what we've been working on. Recommendation five is the mission core values that the GAC is setting an expectation that any change will not limit their ability to provide advice or any the ability for the board to act upon this advice. And the GAC also requires that there is a clear continuation of ICANN's ability to enforce contracts. And as far as the GNSO is concerned, there is qualified support with some divergent positions on the scope of contract enforcement. And I think that's the core of our discussion later today on this recommendation five. Recommendation six on human rights is also on our agenda. There is no consensus yet from the GAC. They will consider whether to join any consensus that would materialize, hopefully, during this call. And the GNSO is generally supports, but some groups believe that it should be detailed in Workstream 2. Recommendation 9 is about incorporating the ASO and AC, the AOC review teams. And GNSO is signaling limited support with some opposition and potentially divergent qualifications. And I think that's also on our agenda, but I hadn't noted any item that was not already in our discussion items. Recommendation 10 is about the SOAC accountability, and there's a suggestion by the GAC, which is actually consistent with an input from the GNSO, that the reviews should be in cooperation with the SOAC. And the GAC also underlines that government's accountability is to their citizens and that principles of sovereignty may apply. And within the GNSO, there's limited support with some opposition. And the opposition is about those same issues that have been discussed last Thursday in the comments. Recommendation 11 is obviously a highlight and a much anticipated discussion for Thursday, but I think it's important to note that while there's no consensus in the GAC, there's no objection either. And within the GNSO, there is a there is broad opposition as it's written now, and a list of the concerns that are consistent with the comments we started discussing last Thursday. And finally, on recommendation 12, there's support, but the GAC requests a clear time frame. And once again, I think that's consistent with what we've been doing so far. I'm sorry for being long. Just a quick summary before opening for any discussion. I think there is, I would note that there are interesting similarities between the GAC input and the GNSO input. First of all, it's been a lot of work assembling these inputs, and I think we should all thank and express how grateful we can be to the teams that worked very hard at providing these inputs in a timely manner. There was some divergence within each of the chartering organizations. So let's not underestimate the amount of work that has been undertaken by these to provide us some workable input. It's great that we can note that there is an absence of formal objection, although obviously some gaps remain. And it's also good news for us, as we've been working since January, that I was not able, and I think we haven't been able as co-chairs, to locate any of the arguments as being a surprise unknown to our group. And all of the comments raised in this are consistent with the comments that we've been managing and dealing with during the last 3 weeks since the beginning of January. So this is confirming the relevance of what we've been doing so far. I haven't been spotting anything to redo because of these inputs. And with that, I'd like to ask whether there are any significant concern or issue in the GAC or GNSO inputs that we would have missed and that we would have to take into account or review in the process of our finalizing the next steps. And would suggest that once our next steps are clear and agreed on, we write to every chartering organization to thank them for the time they've been dedicating to providing us this feedback and, of course, provide them with some clarity on our next steps. That's going to be it for this long introduction, and I'm turning to you for any additional point or questions. And first in line is Alan. Alan?
Thank you very much. It's Alan Greenberg. I just wanted to give you a brief update on the ALAC position. We've reviewed the our original submission and where we are right now. And at this point, we have one item not yet discussed, two items not discussed, but we don't believe they're going to be substantive, and two of them are currently under discussion by the CCWG, and we're optimistic that the end result will be something that's satisfactory to us. I'll be documenting the specifics of those five items in an email later today.
Thank you, Anand. Can I ask what the item not discussed would be about? Just to make sure I locate it in terms of number of recommendations or something?
The substantive one not discussed is under the mission, and I raised that the other day, and I presume it's on Becky's list to bring up at one point. It's whether market
All right.
Issues are
good.
We have any discretion on those or not?
Okay, thanks. That was raised at the previous meeting, so
yes,
it was well in our. Under our radar, so thank you very much.
Yeah, there's two other items which haven't been discussed. We don't believe they're substantive, but we would like them raised, but I'll raise them in my email.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Alan. Any other comment on this update regarding chartering organizations' input? I am seeing none, and as a consequence, I would now turn to Thomas for the next agenda item. Thomas? Thomas, are you speaking to a muted microphone? Or have you simply disappeared?
I had to unmute myself, so that took me a while. Thank you very much, Mathieu. The next agenda item might be a quick one, but it may also be on substance. You will remember that we've asked our lawyers to reach out to Jones Day to discuss a compromise language on the waiver / indemnification in context with individual board member removal. This discussion between the firms should have taken place earlier today. So let me ask Holly and Rosemary whether there's any progress to report on.
Yes, this is Rosemary. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
So we did have a call with ICANN Legal and Jones Day and your two firms on the call. And we got feedback on the waiver language that we had presented to them. Basically, the feedback was that the board still remains strongly opposed to including any waiver, narrowed or otherwise. I think at this point, Holly and I think it will be appropriate to share some waiver language with the CCWG, and that should be going out shortly, so that you know what we discussed and what the board opposed and what you could consider. Secondly, we talked about the indemnification. It sounds like they've had some discussions, and the board has indicated to Jones Day that they support having indemnification that would apply to statements that are made in the rationale that's contemplated by the escalation process with some qualifiers. So this is only for the rationale that's contemplated by escalation process. And it would be only for statements that are made in good faith after due diligence concerning the veracity of the facts that are presented. There is a current indemnification provision in the bylaws now, which pretty much tracks California corporate law provisions on indemnification. This indemnification that I just mentioned regarding this rationale would most likely be presented as a separate and new paragraph. So it would be probably in the same section of the bylaws, but it would not. We would not be trying to work it into that indemnification language that's already there, which has some other qualifiers that wouldn't be present for what the board would apparently support. Jones Day is going to draft that language. We don't know yet what the timing will be on how soon we'll see something from them.
Thanks very much, Rosemary. Alan's hand is up. Alan, please.
Thank you very much. 2 points. Number one, identifying only what is actually written in the rationale is somewhat problematic, in that the policy we're proposing mandates a community forum and a wide discussion of this. And if we're only allowed to read the words we published and repeat them 6 times, that's not going to make for a very productive discussion. That's number one. Number two, I'd like clarification on who is being indemnified. At one point, the board said the chairs. At another point, they suggested maybe the whole councils or committees, but I think it's rather important to understand who it is that we are potentially identifying. Thank you.
Rosemary, would you like to respond to that?
Yes. We certainly did not tell Jones Day or ICANN Legal that the scope of indemnification that the board proposes was acceptable. We just asked to see language. And, of course, that is a very good point, Ellen, that it is narrower. It would not cover statements that were made during a community forum, for example. It would only cover the official statement, the official rationale. We didn't specifically discuss this. My understanding of the import of tying it to the official rationale is that it would cover that language, and so any claim made against anyone based on that language, but not, other language. Other language there's that they aren't proposing or they're not supporting at this point indemnification.
Thanks, Rosemary. Chris is asking in the chat whether you, Alan, could say what you think it should cover. So can you share your thoughts on that with us?
Are we talking about what content or who? or both?
Content.
Well, if we're going to have a wide-ranging discussion, which is going to be open to other people to listen to, presumably documented, then I think it has to cover that kind of content as well. I mean, yes, it should be said in good faith, but you know, subtle differences in wordings can end up with significant results in this kind of thing. So I don't see how we can mandate this kind of wide-ranging discussion where other people are asking questions or making comments who didn't issue the rationale and have them covered as well. So I don't think this goes far enough.
Any more interventions and views on that?
If it covered the community forum discussions and the rationale, and it included the full committees and or councils as opposed to just the chairs, that's something I think we could have a substantive discussion on within our within the ALAC, and presumably the other groups could as well, and decide whether that's sufficient. The answer is probably.
Okay, let me pause for a second to see whether there are more views on that. Greg, please.
Yeah, I'm sympathetic with Alan's view. I think that if the concern is that there are people who may not be involved in providing the rationale who are just kind of running their mouth off and being completely scurrilous and, you know, saying they've got, pictures of an unnamed board member, with a squirrel or something, that, that's that should not be covered by this, even if they're saying that's the reason personally why they supported removal of that board member. You know, there are limits to this, clearly. This is, we're not looking for something. But I think it's, anybody who could reasonably be brought into a suit for the purposes, that based on the rationale and presentation and the like, should be covered. So, I think, part of it has to look at limiting it by, in essence, the subject matter rather than making it a kind of blanket waiver for all behavior. Needs to be some understanding that this isn't covering everything for everybody and everything they do. But the idea is that the rationale itself and maybe some other, things reasonably related to presenting the rationale, in a capacity, needs to be covered. We just want to avoid people shying away from participating in ICANN governance or having a chilling effect on advancing the community powers out of fear of, being engaged in litigation just for, kind of, in essence, doing their job. Even if it's not a job, whatever the hell this is we do.
Thanks, Greg. Alan?
Thank you. Just to be clear, because Robin said something about slander, I'm not only worried about slander as such, I'm worried about essentially things like suing for damages because their employment ability is now restricted because of the occurrence or things like that. So it's got to be general enough to cover that kind of thing, not just accusations of slander or libel. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Chris?
No.
Okay, Chris has lost his courage to speak. No, just kidding. I know you never would. There are also some comments in the chat suggesting that, there shouldn't be a blank check for everyone just to say whatever they wish to say, even if it's defamatory or slander or something else bad. I think what I'm hearing and reading is that the way you described, Rosemary, described the current state of play with only offering protection for what's in the written rationale, that would likely not get this group's support. At this stage, you know, we are very dependent on the chartering organization's support for the refined recommendation, and we have both ALAC and GNSO's concern on record that they want to see some protection for those who are coming up with reasons why a board member should be removed. So I think what's needed now is compromise language that captures the spirit of what has been said, both in terms of the eligible persons for such indemnification, as well in terms of substance. So what we saw in the chat and what we heard in this call should be guidance. And I think we would need compromise language from Jones Day capturing this spirit before the end of the week, so that we can come to closure on this during the next call on or during the call on next Tuesday. So I would assume that if this compromise language does not meet the requirements of the chartering organizations, then we will likely not be able to further compromise, but go with a broader with a waiver and indemnification language that might be broader than what the board might like. But I guess we need to end this discussion and ensure that we get the chartering organizations support, i.e. meet their conditions. I see that Sam has confirmed that the deadline can be met, so that's awesome. Let me also say that nothing should prevent you from delivering earlier. So I think the more time the group has to discuss and refine this on the list, the higher the chances are that we find a solution that's agreeable for everyone. So I think with that, there's not much more we can do on that topic today, which is why we can now move to the human rights discussion, and that's going to be chaired by Matthew.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And I don't remember if we've presented Liam's apologies for not being able to attend the beginning of this call, but I think he would have liked to chair that part, but we'll try to keep up the incredibly hard work that he's been putting up with the Work Party 4 team to move this into a constructive discussion like we've just had on the previous point. So we've attempted, after the last meeting, to put in writing and describe where we are, taking into account the latest proposals received from the lawyers. So you have a set of slides, a short set of slides here that you have scroll control on, which is, first of all, describing the current status. The third draft proposal is suggesting the addition of a bylaw to reaffirm ICANN's commitment to human rights, and also clarifying that it would be implemented in accordance with a framework of interpretation that would be developed as part of Workstream 2. There was a significant majority of comments in support, but also some comments that raised concerns on unintended consequences that the recommended inclusion in the bylaws might have. The board, among others, was suggesting holding any addition of the human rights in the bylaws until the framework of interpretation would be developed. That was the starting point. On the next slide, we did discuss already a few times, must be our third reading, on this topic. There still seems to be a broad support for the recommendation, but some confusion and interpretations, as well as some clarifications that would be needed to address some of the concerns. There were different alternatives discussed. You remember option 2A, 2B, 2C, whatever confusion raised from that. And we haven't been able to reach consensus to the level of the previous one at this point with these alternates. We also need to remember that there's been work on this topic since basically right after the first public comment, and that was certainly amplified by Work Party 4, which started in late July. And the consensus position, although it was rough consensus, did receive a lot of support in the second draft and third draft comments. So trying to address the different concerns, our lawyers have proposed a text for bylaw inclusion, but trying to avoid the unintended consequences that were mentioned by many. And that would be by adding the sentences in red on slide number 4 on your screen, that the bylaw provision will not enter into force until a framework of interpretation is developed as part of Workstream 2 by the CCWG accountability. We're speaking in terms of requirements here, not bylaw text necessarily, but indeed the framework of interpretation is needed for the text to enter into force. And I can show support the establishment of work of such a group to facilitate development of the framework as promptly as possible. So we would like to, what we would like to do today is test whether these clarifications enable us to lift some of the concerns about unintended consequences, whether this is actually considered an improvement to the previous rough consensus on the third draft, and whether there is this can be accepted as a way forward for our work. And with that, I'd like to open the floor for interventions. Obviously, trying to keep in mind that on this recommendation, we know that we need to be flexible and listen to each other's concerns, but also find a way to conclude a discussion that is necessarily not going to make everyone fully happy, but we need to get out of this with something we can live with. And with that, I'd like to open the floor for any concern about the proposed text or expressions of support for the previous one. After you, and first in line is Tatiana. Tatiana, please. Yes, Tatiana.
Hi. Yes, thanks a lot. Sorry, I was muted. Tatiana Tropina is speaking. Well, I have to say that I want to support this proposed text for bylaw inclusion, because I think that we are meeting each other in the middle with this new bylaw text, because I do believe that it solves the board's concerns, and it also allows us to have the bylaw text, so we will have something to work on this framework in the work stream too. I think that we might have some fine tuning later, but all in all, I totally agree with the concept of this bylaw, because I think it addressed basically almost all concerns which were expressed. Thanks.
Thanks, Tatiana. And indeed, I should have registered for the record the concerns we've heard about the number of IRP challenges on that basis, which was discussed, and also the other concern that the IRP panel might have to provide interpretation for human rights commitments in the meantime before the FOI would be developed, which I think this wording avoids as a risk. I think that some speakers are trying to make sure they're speaking last or something. I'm very surprised that the queue is not longer, but I see Marcus' hand is up. And Marcus, I know you're the lead for the board on this, so we're listening to you, Marcus, please. Marcus? Muted microphone, maybe. Your microphone appears muted on the AC room, so you may have to unmute yourself in the room. Marcus, still no sound. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, perfect, Marcus. Thank you.
I have a patchy connection. Sorry.
Marcus,
okay.
You have the floor.
Yes, thank you. I mean, we had a thorough discussion on the board and the... Can you hear me?
Yes, Marcus, that sound is very good.
Okay. Sorry, I had some patchy connection. I didn't hear everything you said, but I got the general gist. And I was saying that a thorough discussion on the board, and then the board is not a monolithic block, and we looked at all the various sides of the issue. And again, I can only repeat what I said the last time, that we confirmed that we are committed upholding human rights within ICANN's mission, and we are committed to work with the community to progress human rights work within ICANN. And again, the human rights statement we mentioned before, we think is the right way forward to reach a meaningful framework to guide human rights considerations within ICANN's mission. Now, looking at the options on the table, there was the A and the B and the C. Again, there are different preferences, but after looking all of them, the board remains convinced that option B would remain the best way forward, as it would allow Worksum 2 to define a framework to proceed before considering whether or not to include a human rights obligation into the bylaws. And this may be a sticking point. Now, we do understand that there are strong concerns that by pushing it down the road, there would nothing happen anymore, but that is not the intention of the board. The board is clearly committed to dealing with this issue, and it would propose to include into the bylaws a requirement for ICANN to address the human rights issue, as well as a requirement to consider, once we do have a framework of interpretation, how to include it into the bylaws. So, to sum it up, our proposal would be essentially threefold: to have a framework of interpretation as part of Worksum 2, and then to develop a cross-community working group that would be chartered with coming up with a framework of interpretation, and then whether and how this framework for interpretation should be referenced in the bylaws would be another story. And lastly, it would be up to the board to consider that recommendations according to the process defined for considering these continuous improvement recommendations would be included into the bylaws. So this is our reaction after a careful study of the proposal. But again, let me repeat what I said at the outset. The commitment here is here, part of the board, with the commitment to upholding human rights as appropriate within ICANN's mission. That's, in a nutshell, the result of the board discussion. Thanks.
Thank you, Marcus. Thank you for the very considerate, and I know you chose your word with care, and after a thorough discussion with the board, and that's much appreciated. My understanding is that you're saying that obviously the approach preferred by the board remains to defer until Workstream 2, and that you're introducing a new approach where there would be a commitment to address the human rights discussions introduced in the bylaws, but that would not be the option that we're putting on the table today. And so I would like to ensure I understand correctly and the group can understand correctly what in the current proposal is still not addressing the board's concerns, as I think there was a considerable amount of effort from our lawyers and our group to actually find ways to address this. And I didn't catch correctly the point where you highlighted what was still not addressed in this proposal. And then I'll turn to the rest of the queue.
If I may come back, but I would also encourage my colleagues, and we do have lawyers on the board who are more familiar with the legal intricacies of these issues, but I've been involved in discussing human rights for the past 10, 15 years in a more diplomatic policy framework, and human rights is never an easy issue. And here, I think the crux is the board is not convinced whether we come to a conclusion, whether it makes sense to have a reference to human rights in the bylaws before actually having done the groundworks. It may be part of a mission statement, fine, but to have a reference to human rights in the bylaws opens vulnerabilities of issues we have not actually discussed. So it's, in essence, putting the cart before the horse in simple terms. So, you know, let's have this discussion, let's develop this framework of interpretation, let's develop a human rights statement, let's have a cross-community working group dealing with these issues, and then once we have done the basic work, come to a conclusion. So now this may be a slightly oversimplifying interpretation of the board's position, and I call on my fellow board members and as well on the legal team to beef it up a bit. But in essence, that's how I understand the result of our discussions. Let's have a deep discussion on how to develop a framework of interpretation first, and then let's see how best we deal with it in legal terms, in interpreting it into the bylaws, instead of having a reference in the bylaws, however dormant it is, then it kicks in once you have it done. So that's how best I can interpret our position, but as I said, maybe fellow board members may come in, and also our legal staff, experts. I that's hopefully made it a bit clearer, and let's discuss this. Thanks.
Thank you, Marcus. I will turn now to the queue, but would observe that at this point it's a little bit difficult for me as a co-chair, and I've been moderately involved in these discussions, to understand exactly what board concern has not been addressed so far, and that would be very helpful to understand that. I think we also need to also understand how this new proposal that the board is introducing would actually make a step towards the initial proposal that was getting a lot of support from our group and in the public comments. But now I would like to turn to Nils and take the cue. I know Chris is on the line as well. Let's have Nils speak first. Nils.
Thank you very much, Mathieu, for this opportunity to speak. I am frankly very disappointed by what the board come out with. The board can say that it's committed to human rights. Well, I don't see any commitment to that work whatsoever, because we have been discussing at length and considerably. This discussion has been going on since the report that was done by Thomas Schneider and Sonia Rucci. We had many meetings about this in LA, in London, in Buenos Aires. We had long discussions in the CCWG. We had long discussions in Working Party 4. There was consensus also by individual board members that participated. Then there came the comments of the board that came out of the blue. We worked very hard to resolve them with the CCWG lawyers. We worked together with the lawyers of the ICANN board. We addressed all the issues point by point several times at long calls with long work and with a lot of legal work. And there's not only time, but also money went into discussing this. And now the board is moving backward, and with this, it is insulting the community and the work that has been going into this. And I'm really, really disappointed that we're being put like this, and that the board's also not providing an argumentation why it's been doing so. So we're not really having a constructive discussion anymore. The board is actually just coming out that they do not want any human rights commitment in the bylaws. And that is that's very disappointing to see and hear. And I really do not understand how we can accommodate the board any further than this. So I'm really disappointed, and I don't see how we can go further now.
Thank you, Nils. And I would indeed encourage all the speakers in the line to maybe highlight any ways they would see a way forward, if need be. But I think we'll have to come to closure at some point on this after three discussions, and we're probably reaching the point where we might have to consider that we're not making any further progress, and then we'd have to make a decision. Next is Tatiana.
Thanks a lot. Tatiana Tropinas is speaking for the record. Well, the way proposed by the board is not solving the problem at all, because to develop the framework of interpretation, we need the bylaw language. We need to know what we are actually interpreting. Board raised concerns in the public comments, and we were trying to address them. I believe that the proposed text perfectly addressed the concerns, and this can be a very good way forward, and this what we can live with, this what we can use without being afraid of the IRPs and everything, courts, litigations. The fact that the board is coming with another suggestion out of the blue, which would require another set of discussions and whatsoever, I don't find it a possible way forward. What I find I think it's just the statement, my way or highway. I don't see any argumented discussion here. I think we can just go forward and just take this bylaw text, the last draft, which is now on the screen, proposed, because it does address the board's concerns. So I think this can be possibly the way forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Tatiana. Very clear. Alan, and then Cavus, Chris, and I will close the queue after Greg Shatton. Alan.
Thank you very much. Three quick comments. Should this bylaw that's on the screen go ahead, I have two specific comments on it. One, the sentence which starts with, in particular, this does not create, does not sound like bylaw language. It sounds like a prediction of someone's evaluation of what it does, but it's not a guarantee that it doesn't create because the courts or whatever will make their own decision. So I don't see why that sentence is reasonable in a bylaw, or to that extent, I don't even think it gives me any comfort. Number two, a minor thing in the red text, it should say a framework of interpretation of what? We use the term framework of interpretation in many different ways in ICANN, so it needs to be specific. My understanding of the board's concern is that if we have bylaw language that mentions the term human rights, even if it says it's not an operative bylaw, that it opens up some liabilities, some risk. And I would like to have at least a couple of examples from the board of the kind of risk they're talking about so that we can evaluate whether indeed this is something that that is substantive and we need to worry about, or it's just, as some people have said, you know, they don't want the words. So feedback on what the difference is between not having anything and having this, which says it's not operative, would help understanding that. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I would note that we indeed asked for some concrete examples already when we started these discussions, and they're still welcome, obviously. The first two points I think we can be addressed. Well, I think this is lawyers provided input, so I would tend to think that this was addressing your first point about does not create any new whatever liability, but it's to be checked, no problem. Cavus, you're next. You sold us a solution.
Can you hear me, please?
Yes, we can hear you, Cavus.
Yeah. Matthew, it is a very surprising situation. We are touching one of the most important elements of our accountability. I think it is very difficult to decide at this very meeting. We have two options. One option is whatever we have now on the screen. It is more or less the consensus emerged that we reference the bylaw. However, effective date or date of putting into force will be postponed until the framework is approved. That is one option. The second option that I propose for consideration, ICANN board would pass immediately a resolution. In that resolution, all of the commitment that Marcus mentioned in detail will be mentioned with all reference to what you have done. Mention all of those commitments. That resolution will be sent to CCWG. CCWG draft a new resolution. In that resolution, mentioned the issue that the bylaw at this stage does not have the effective date because of this. However, attached to this resolution is the ICANN commitment. This is something that all entities outside the ICANN, they do. Whenever they have problem to work on a sort of the provisions in the Constitution, Convention, Charter, so on and so forth, they would have a resolution. Resolution would have the same power, but is not part of the treaty text or part of the legal text. So I would see this as a second option. But we have to really see what would be the text and language of the ICANN commitment with respect to implementation or commitment of the respect of the bylaw between now and until the framework is finished. Once we have that resolution, we would try to see to in what way we can see that resolution. Either we have another resolution of CCWG, cross-reference to that, and attach it to the bylaw, which would not be part of the bylaw, but is cross-reference of the bylaw, or we go to the option one that we have, what you have on the screen. These are the two options. We could not start a new discussion on the proposal in the drafting of bylaw. I think we are at the end of the process, and we have to take any of these two options. Take it as it is, or ask for a commitment in the resolution, cross-reference that resolution in one way or other within the bylaw. Thank you.
Thank you, Nevus, and thank you for the proposal. And I think we need to test whether there's that seems to be something that would address some of the concerns raised on both sides or not. I noted that basically that would still say the preferred way of the CCWG is, and that's unless we get a satisfactory board resolution and can endorse it. Next is Chris, and Chris, I know you have a lawyer hat where you can provide us some insights on the board's view on this.
Thank you for that. Look, this is a very passion. This is a subject that brings passion to our discussions, and I acknowledge that there are a number of individual people on this call and very passionate about this. That's why we hear words like disappointment and so on. I want to try and be as straightforward as I can be about this, and I say knowing that what I'm about to say is not going to be satisfactory for many. First of all, to be clear, the board's position has not changed. The board's formal position has been since we started discussing this. What we've put on the table today is a suggestion of a way to move it forwards. The principal problem, I think, is that it's twofold. One, that by putting it in the this dormant bylaw thing is complicated and difficult, and we don't really understand why it's even necessary. There is a process in place for dealing with workstream 2 work. That process is very clear and has been accepted by the community. And where things go into workstream 2, there will be a bylaw that ensures that the workstream 2 will be dealt with properly. For some reason, this human rights issue seems to have been lifted to a different level where we're creating a whole new process where it gets mentioned in the bylaws in a dormant manner by the workstream 2 work being done. And that seems to us to be a slightly weird way of doing it from a consistency point of view. Secondly, there is, in our view, a risk that because this construct of a dormant bylaw isn't really tested or doesn't really exist in general terms, there is a risk that it could lay itself open to interpretation of legislation in an IRP or in a court, that notwithstanding the fact that it's claimed to be dormant, it's still there. And thirdly, there is an assumption here that the work on human rights, full agree should be done, and we're very comfortable doing workstream 2, will result in a bylaw. And that's not necessarily so. It may result in provisions being made in other ways, statements being made, policy being made, and so on. It may or may not result in a bylaw. So the board is extremely uncomfortable with the assumption that is being made that the work of workstream 2 on human rights will lead to a bylaw. It's uncomfortable on the risk analysis of putting in something that is a construct that there is no basis for, really, a dormant bylaw, and how that may be treated by a panel or may be treated by a court. And our suggestion is very clear language in the Workstream 2 bylaw that sets out very clearly that there will be a working group, whatever you want to call it, however it works, that at the end of the day will produce a series of recommendations, and those recommendations will be treated in precisely the same way as any other recommendations that may come through in Workstream 2, and it will be subject to all of the community empowerment mechanisms that have been put in place in Workstream 1. So that's our position, and I appreciate that is not going to satisfy people. But I think that the suggestion that we've made of making a very clear statement about human rights within Workstream 2 is a sensible way forwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. I had closed the queue after Greg, and Tatiana, you spoke already twice, so I would be tempted to keep that closing. I'd like to turn now to Luca from Switzerland, and then Greg, and we'll close the discussion.
Yes, thank you very much, Mathieu, and I would like to, of course, share many of the voices that have expressed their support to maintaining that recommend and reference that is clearly one of the important outcomes of this whole process and very dear to large parts of the community. Now, what I would like to suggest also is that we maybe take a step back and look at the whole process and where we've come from. And we believe that the language that we've been seeing even before the dormant edition today has already been quite narrow. It has been diluted down. Many of the concerns have been accommodated. The language makes clear that the commitment doesn't create any obligations for ICANN or any other entity. So from a legal point and perspective, we don't see the risks or unintended consequences as the language is already very narrow and clear. And secondly, and most importantly, we believe that rejecting that recommendation would send a rather negative message out for this important field that has been very important throughout the whole process. So in the spirit of compromise, I think it would really be favorable for ICANN, for the whole transition process to maintain the text that we see today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Luca. And then next is Greg, if I'm not mistaken. Greg, yes, and then we'll close.
Thank you. Greg Chatton, for the record. And I think that remarks on behalf of the board, you know, point out even more, you know, the validity of the compromise proposed on the screen, that it is a compromise and a meeting point, hopefully, among a number of different positions, those who wanted more, those who wanted less, those who wanted something different, those who wanted something later, those that wanted something earlier. You know, this is kind of, I see this as the center point. And I think the language on screen is important as the stake in the ground and the starting point from which we work. I think that, you know, so I'm not, you know, sitting here saying I'm disappointed in the board, but I'm saying that the board is at one of those points that is still away from the center. I would encourage them to join the center. They said they're willing to have some language that references human rights in the bylaws. I think that the concerns that were expressed I didn't really find deeply concerning or, you know, likely to occur in that sense. And, you know, they can be controlled for as well. I think that you know, to do less than this, really, I wouldn't say it's a step backwards for the board, but I think it would be a step backwards for all of us. You know, this is not perfect, but this is at least the starting point from which we, you know, generally seem to agree we want to start, and we go from here forward into Workstream 2 with speed, and not merely deliberate speed, to arrive at the point where this can and will become in force and understandable and, you know, predictable. That's where we need to go. So I hope that you know, we see, you know, others saying that they are disappointed but willing to live with this. I think that that should be the general theme. You know, if nobody's perfectly happy, that's usually a sign that we've actually achieved our objective. So I hope that's where
good
we
point.
Stay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. I will make a conclusion in a couple of minutes, but I think Holly had a few points in the chat, and I would just like to ensure we got all the legal inputs before concluding. Holly, any short last comment? Holly, if you're speaking, you're on mute. We cannot wait for hearing from you. Okay, so you hung up. So that's, I don't know if Rosemary or any other lawyer has is able to speak up at this point. If not, I will certainly conclude, because I think the direction of this discussion was actually pretty clear. I think there's still a lot of uncomfort from the board on this proposal, but I haven't heard any traction for the counter proposal for the board. And as such, after our third discussion on this, I think the proposed text on your screens, with the clarifications that were asked for by Alan, among others, is our way forward. And I would say we can move forward to the next finalization steps of our work on the spaces. We keep in mind Kavu's suggestion that, of course, if the board came up with a sudden action that would be such a demonstration of its commitment that it would convince our group of the fact that this bylaw inclusion would not be necessary anymore, then we might have to review this on the basis of a formal action from the board. But I think unless that happens, the proposed text with refinements is our way forward. And I'm turning back to Holly for a few words, if you have, Holly.
I'm very sorry, all. I've become absolutely incompetent with hitting the unmute button. We heard the concerns that the board raised to the earlier draft language and drafted this language specifically to underscore that an IRP or other enforcement effort would not be available at this time until such time as the Workstream 2 effort had been undertaken and the bylaw had formally come into effect. We've been trying to understand, sort of post this language, what possible risks or fears the board might have that are realistically grounded in law. And frankly, I'm struggling to find them. I'm unaware of any legal basis for the concerns that they're raising about the impact of this current language. I would welcome any case law or statute citation that the legal team, the ICANN legal team or the Jones Day team can point us to. But we really have drafted this in a very targeted fashion, and therefore I think with the risks and the fears that have been stated on this section of the discussion are fairly unfounded. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Holly. That's certainly confirming the way forward. So way forward is going to be based on the comments we've heard today. To finalize the wording of this recommendation, and of course stay open in case the CAVUS option of a resolution was coming up in the next few days or weeks, then we might have to reconsider, but I think that's our basic option, and the burden is now on the board to demonstrate otherwise after three discussions. And I think taking all the concerns very seriously into account. Sam, I'm sorry, I had closed the queue, and so I will move to the next item, to Thomas. Thomas, you may be speaking to a muted microphone. Thomas?
I do apologize. Yes, we can move to agenda item number 4 now, which is another discussion on the mission statement. And for those who have read the agenda, it actually said that we're going to spend 445 minutes on this, and maybe we will. But for the time being, let's try to keep it to 45 minutes. And Becky has ably taken care of that topic for months and months now. So over to you, Becky. Maybe you can give us a brief overview where we are. We found resolutions on some items, and let's try to close the remaining questions as well.
Thank you. We spent a lot of time on the last call talking about the consumer trust issue, and I believe our conclusion based on confirmation regarding the intended meaning of the affirmation of commitments was that the language in, as drafted right now would remain, which is to say the bylaws would reference the affirmation of commitments review of new GTLDs, including consumer trust, but that we would not have a general reference in the mission commitments and core values, Article 1 of the bylaws. Alan has mentioned, in several cases, discussions, we did remove language from affirmation from core value 4, which now reads that ICANN will depend on market mechanisms to promote and sustain a healthy competitive environment in the DNS market. This initially in the current bylaws read, where feasible and appropriate, ICANN would depend on market mechanisms to promote and sustain a healthy competitive environment in the DNS market. There was one other provision in the bylaws language that had that caveat, the where feasible and appropriate. We initially in the first and second draft proposals, we eliminated the where feasible and appropriate language, given a sort of general language there, general balancing language with respect to core values. In Dublin, we discussed both of these and we agreed to reinsert where feasible and appropriate for, I think it's core value 5 or 6, but not to reinsert it here. I am going to scroll down. Do I have scroll control? Yeah. If people would scroll down to the core values, I think, actually, let me just ask a question. Do you want me to go through these and just give a summary, and then we'll go back to do the detailed discussion? Matthew?
I would suggest we do that, Matthew.
Okay.
Becky.
Thomas, okay. Okay, so that is one issue that we need to discuss. We are awaiting the board input on the root server language in the mission, and I believe that there may have been a call on that today, but we don't have the results of that yet. We have had a very lively discussion about language relating to the numbers organization, including a contribution from the numbers organization this morning, which we can discuss in more detail. We have discussed but have not reached resolution on issues relating to mission language regarding ICANN's regulation of services that use the Internet, unique identifiers, or the content that such services carrier provide. ICANN shall have the ability to negotiate enter into and enforce agreements with contracted parties in furtherance in it. Actually, it's in service of its mission. I don't know why the redlining didn't go out there. So it's in service of its mission. As I mentioned, the vast majority of commenters in the third round were supportive of this language. The ICANN board has suggested that this kind of language is inappropriate in a bylaws provision. They have not objected to that concept, but they have suggested that that language be sort of moved to the general notes to the drafters section and ask the final bylaws drafters to find appropriate solutions to it. We asked our counsel on this, and they supported the notion of drafting general principles into the governing documents and providing a mechanism for interpreting those in specific situations. So, general mission principles at a general level appropriate for inclusion in the bylaws, understanding that refinement and interpretation will be needed thereafter, presumably through IRP. Our lawyers also raised a number of questions regarding grandfathering, including, what would be the effective date for any grandfathering, whether it be a date-specific or an event, how the grandfathering would work with respect to registry agreements for new GTLD applicants who have not yet signed registry agreements, what would be the effect of the grandfathering language on renewals of existing registry agreements, and again, this is something that ALAC raised and asked for assurance that existing registry agreements could be renewed as currently drafted, and that registry agreements that had not yet been signed for new GTLD applicants could be entered into and could contain PICs, for example. The attorneys also asked what the effect of contract modification would be and whether there should be a sunset on grandfathering. And then finally, we have received requests for impact assessments requested by several group members, and I think this really goes to the discussion that we've had on the list in the last couple of days regarding the standard PICS specifications, which is there a way to look at these things? So, for example, to look at the standard PICS specifications in the registry agreements and say, are these things all within scope, or are they not, as a way of understanding what it is we are doing by way of the mission language. So that's the summary.
Thanks very much, Becky. Shall we go through the individual items one by one now?
Okay, so if we go to the chart, I think the first item that we need to discuss is the language in core value 4 and ALAC's concerns about the where feasible and appropriate. So if you scroll down to the chart that appears at the bottom of this, you will see core value 4, and this appears on
Page 17.
Thank you. Page 17. And you will also see that core value 2 is where we have added it back. So just to put this in context, we had two core values that had this to the extent feasible and appropriate caveat in it, one regarding ICANN's delegation of coordinating functions to recognized expert bodies or internal bodies, and the depending on market mechanisms to promote and sustain a healthy competitive environment. We took these out for draft report 1-2. ALAC raised this as a in both cases as a concern. We agreed in Dublin to reinsert this in core value 2 regarding delegation. We did not agree to reinsert it into core value 4, where ICANN is called upon to depend on market mechanisms to promote and sustain a healthy competitive environment in the DNS market. ALEC has objected to the deletion of that language and continues to advocate that it be put back in. So that's the discussion on the table.
Thanks very much, Becky. I see Cavus has raised his hand for a while. Cavus, would you like to speak to this?
Yes, I would like to comment on core value number 2. At the beginning, we have this section or part saying that to the extent feasible, no problem, and appropriate. Who decides that it is appropriate or not appropriate? If it is clear for everybody, I think this qualifier could serve in order to reach some consensus and agreement that before delegating any actions and so on and so forth, we should see two conditions. One, whether it is feasible to do that, and second, whether it is appropriate. My question is that decision entity is who? Is ICANN board or is somebody else? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. And since that request is coming from ALEC, maybe Alan can also respond to that question.
Sure. Just to point out that I don't think core value 2 is under dispute right now. Those were the words that were in the bylaws, and we're simply recommending that they stay there. So I'm not sure we want to be in a position right now to investigate every word in the bylaws and make sure that we all have a common understanding of it. We're going to be here for a very long time in that case. I presume it is the board that determines what's appropriate, and the various appeal processes can question if someone thinks they're wrong. So I certainly don't want to go into a further investigation of that. In the new core value 4, which was core value 5 before, Our concern is very simple. Right now, and I'll give an example, there may be more examples, but to be honest, I haven't gone to find them, but the one example I hope will suffice. In the RCEP process, in the procedure by which a registry can ask for an amendment to their contract, ICANN asks the registry to answer a number of questions. One of the questions is, are there competitive issues involved with making this change? Is this going to affect the competitive environment? They answer that. We evaluate it. If we determine that there may well be some significant competition issues, we refer to an external agency. But we do the first evaluation ourselves. Without this clause there, I suspect we cannot even ask the question, never mind evaluate the answer. So we're taking ourselves completely out of the issue of concern of whether there may be anti-competitive or competition issues involved, and that is problematic in my mind. It's something that we currently do. If we take ourselves out of that business, then we have to stop doing that, and I don't understand the issues well enough to not understand to say that that won't harm ICANN or its ability to effectively be a custodian of the GTLD space.
Thanks, Alan. Becky? Becky, are you there? Kathy, it's your turn. We can't hear you.
I must have silenced her. That's a joke.
She's just typing that she's dialing back in.
We have to keep those unmute buttons far away from the hang-up.
Which is correct. So let's just pause for a second. While we're waiting for Becky to come back, Caboose's hand is raised again. So, Caboose, please.
If you hear me, I want just to address the grandfathering issue. We have no problem for grandfathering. Whenever you want to give some stability for something which already existed, you can grandfather that, and it is everywhere. I have seen many, many things. The date of grandfathering, it depends on the people implementing that. Until the time that this grandfathering is required, it will be maintained. So we don't need to talk about up to what date it will be continued to be implemented. However, the change of the date or waiving the grandfathering issue, it should be by the community. The third issue, I'm very sorry, we cannot legally grandfather something which we don't know the content of which, i.e., any future agreement that we are not aware cannot be grandfathered by this moment or at this moment. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. We will surely address the grandfathering topic a bit later in this call. Let's try to focus on the market mechanism question now. So Becky's back with us. Becky, it's your turn.
Thanks. And I think Alan's pointing to the R-step process goes to exactly my concern on this issue. I think that it is absolutely that the virtue of the R-step process is that ICANN does not make a determination about whether it can or cannot rely on market mechanisms in that process. If it sees something that it has a question about, it simply refers that to appropriate sovereign bodies with the expertise and authority necessary to make determinations about antitrust law. And it waits a period of time for those bodies to act. If those bodies do not act, it permits the proposed service or product or whatever it is to move forward and be offered. That is not a case of ICANN not relying on market mechanisms. That is a case of ICANN giving appropriate bodies a reasonable opportunity to weigh in on something where they have a question. I don't see that there's any issue with ICANN continuing to do that. What I do have a significant problem with is ICANN determining in any particular case that it cannot rely on market mechanisms when it does not possess either the kind of sovereign authority that competition regulators operate and the necessary extremely sophisticated and frankly diverse from jurisdiction to jurisdiction law that relies there. So I think both Alan and I agree that the resolution in the R-step is perfectly appropriate and should be continued. I feel strongly that any language in the bylaws that gives ICANN the authority to say it is, as opposed to a regulator, that it's not appropriate to rely on market mechanisms is very problematic.
Thanks very much, Becky. I'm not entirely sure whether Alan's hand was an old hand or a new hand.
Hands are in order that they were raised. It's a new hand.
My device is not showing them in that order necessarily, which is why I'm asking. So, Alan, it's your turn then.
Thank you very much. If we were changing the wording to saying something closer to what Becky was suggesting we not be able to do, to prescribe that, I could probably live with that. But that's not what it's saying right now. Becky described the RCEP as if every time we get an RCEP, we go to the competition bodies and ask them, is there a problem? That's not the case. I don't know whether we've ever asked them if there's a problem or not. The rules certainly allow for us to do that. Currently, we do ask a question, and we evaluate the answer. And if we believe there may be some issues which are questionable, which require professional judgment, we can or do refer them to the outside bodies as applicable. My concern is if we are saying that it's completely hands-off and we must not even consider competition issues, it's not clear to me we can ask the question or do the initial evaluation. And that becomes critical. And as I said, there may be other cases. This is the one that came up in the discussion, so it's an easy one to discuss. I don't see how we can walk away from being concerned about it, but we certainly don't want to be making the detailed kind of judgments that regulatory authorities or others in that have jurisdiction can make. But that's not the same as walking away from the issue completely.
Thanks, Alan. Greg?
Thanks, Greg Chapman, for the record. You know, the way I look at this language overall is it promotes essentially a laissez-faire sort of posture for ICANN. You know, you let the market work its way out of things and basically hands off. And you know, that is one economic theory, perhaps. Not that I'm an economic theorist, but I think we're confusing a competitive environment and antitrust violations. There's quite a big spectrum between a really robust and healthy competitive environment and one that actually violates antitrust laws or competition laws. I think the idea that we can run around and get advisory opinions from in the U.S. the DOJ or FTC, or in Germany the Bundeskartellamt, or from the EU is not something I think that is done regularly. It may not even be something that can be done at all. Typically, those kinds of there are specific places you can get no action letters and the like, but I don't think this is one of those places anyway. So I think we're kind of losing. We're talking about a lot of hypotheticals that I don't think are actuals. So I think that the point here is that where feasible and appropriate language gives ICANN some discretion to look at whether the market mechanisms are promoting and sustaining a competitive environment and that has nothing to do really with antitrust laws. You can have an environment that is not particularly competitive or is not really working as a competitive environment, but no antitrust laws are being violated. That I think is where concerns may rise. Not in out and out competition law violations, which is a whole separate problem, really, I think, a separate problem from what's being discussed here. Thanks.
But, Greg, would you suggest altering the language or keeping it?
I think going back to the language, the where feasible and appropriate language, I think is appropriate. I think it's feasible as well.
So let's hear Sebastian, and after that, Becky will have a last word on it, and then we will have our break. Sebastian?
Yes, thank you, Tama. Surely it's my difficulty to understand difficult language that it's English, but My understanding was that if we take out where feasible and appropriate, that means that the only way to promote and sustain a competitive environment is to depend on the market mechanism. And I don't think that it's the only way. There are other way. Market is one way. There are other things that we can do. And it's maybe because a lot of people within ICANN forget where feasible and appropriate that we are with the current new GTLD program, where very few proposal from some continent were there. And I really think that we need to keep it. Greg has better words than mine to explain why. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Becky?
So I will just close by saying I think I've said what I need to say. I think that the bottom line is ICANN doesn't have the skill set or authority needed to maintain competitive markets in any other way, because that is fundamentally the role of a regulator. And there are regulators that have that authority and power. So I continue to think that charging ICANN or in empowering ICANN with some ability to other than market mechanisms for maintaining competition puts it in the role of regulator in a very highly regulated and highly specialized skill set area.
Thanks very much, Becky. I have closed the queue on this. Since Steve has not spoken to this, I will allow Steve to speak, and after that we're going to break.
Thank you. In the existing, I have a question for the lawyers on the call. Feasible and appropriate is in the existing bylaws. Feasible and appropriate depend on market mechanisms to promote and sustain. Is the implication there that if market mechanisms cannot feasibly or appropriately promote a competitive environment, that core value reflects back upon ICANN and makes it an obligation of ICANN, not the markets, to promote and sustain a competitive environment? In other words, and I'll paste it into the chat, this is core value number 5. Does this core value, as written today's bylaws, I'm just trying to interpret today's bylaws, does that core value limit what ICANN should do in depending upon the market, i.e. when it's only feasible and appropriate? Or does it say that when markets cannot do it, that ICANN must do it? And I'm stop now and take an answer from Becky or anyone else who can help us interpret this.
You know, since we've run over time already a little bit, I suggest that we keep your question in mind, and when we reconvene after the break, we're going to continue the discussion with exact answers to your question. We're now going to break for 10 minutes, and we're going to reconvene at 8:50 UTC. Talk to you in a bit. Thank you. And for those who have refreshments, they can make this a refreshment break.
Yeah.
Impact payments. Good girl.
Hello.
We will reconvene in 1 minute. This is Thomas.
Thomas, can you hear my audio?
I'm here.
Yes, we can, Renalia. Thank you.
Hi everyone, this is Thomas. Let's continue our conversation. I saw the recording has been restarted. That's great. Steve had asked a question before we took our break. So Steve, if you're on the audio, can you maybe repeat your question so that we can get it answered? Apart from that, I think we don't seem to be able to find compromise language on this during this call, so let's move to the next agenda item and try to advance the discussion on the mailing list in the meantime, and then we're going to close this during the next call. Steve?
Thank you. I'll just quickly repeat the question because it would help me to understand how to react to the ALX proposal. I've repeated in the chat what the bylaws already say, where feasible and appropriate, depend on market mechanisms to promote and sustain a competitive environment. My question is, does that simply explain the conditions under which we depend on the market and leave it at that, or does it mean that where the market is either not feasible or inappropriate to promote competition, that ICANN must step in and do other things to promote competition? In other words, does this item simply say that the market can be depended upon, or does it turn around and give ICANN carte blanche to pursue other measures of increasing competition? Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Does anyone volunteer to respond to that, or shall we take that to the list? So, Greg volunteers. So, Greg, if you could keep it brief, because I think we need to move on to the next item.
I would say that the feasible and appropriate language does not give ICANN carte blanche. It really means that the, in essence, the market gets the first crack at promoting or sustaining a competitive environment. But if the market, you know, bare knuckle capitalism or whatever you want to call it, is not sustaining a competitive environment, that ICANN can take action to improve the situation. And I would note that market mechanisms, as I understand the term, really refers to nothing being done by any source. It's just letting the market itself work, and that's that. And so even artificial scarcity rounds, black box bidding, and reveal dates are all non-market mechanisms. And I won't even touch digital archery. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg, and thanks for refreshing our memory on digital archery. That's a trauma that I had thought I had come over, or I had overcome. Alan, I had indicated that after Steve's question, we would move on to the next item, and in the essence of time, I would suggest we stick to that. Since there is objection on this point on the record from a chartering organization, let's try to bring this closer to a compromise between now and the next discussion on this, and we will then close this item during the next meeting when we discuss this. I'd therefore like to ask Becky to bring up the next question.
Something happened to the document. Okay, great. If we go to page 10 of the document, this is the ASO language. I think that the issue here was that there was concern and objections about referencing the MOU. So some language was proposed and reiterated, and then Azumi submitted some other language. So on page 10, where you see the yellow and blue highlighting, both of these things are proposed change language. So up until this morning, we were discussing the coordination of numbers with the language. Further, it ratifies or implements, or ratifies and implements at the global level, policies related to these IP and AS numbers and developed according to the ICANN address supporting organization memorandum of understanding between ICANN and the number resource organization dated 21 October 2004. I think that this was pretty, that we were pretty close on this. Azumi further offered to refine this in the blue highlighted. In this role, ICANN provides registration services and open access for global number registries as requested by the IETF and the regional internet registries, and facilitates the development of related global number registry policies by the affected communities as agreed with the RIRs. The language highlighted in blue, as Azumi says, is the most recent proposal from the number resource organization. I don't know precisely where to take this, given the fact that we have now two fairly different constructions here, and maybe we should go to comments from people.
Becky, I guess that's an excellent idea. Let me just say that removal of explicit reference to the ASO MOU has been requested by Izumi, and I think others have gone on record as well that they didn't want this. So I suggest that we try to honor that. To be quite honest, I think that the spirit of what we're trying to achieve here is set out quite clearly. So as you prepare for commenting on this, maybe you might wish to consider that we try to capture this and that we leave the exact wordsmithing to the implementation phase. First in line is Greg.
Hold hands, sorry.
Then Izumi.
Thank you. So I'd like to explain the intention, the motivation behind coming up with this latest text. So I do acknowledge and understand that this appears is quite substantial changes from the previous suggested text. And we may appear as that we're coming up with something totally new, ignoring the discussions within the CCWG. However, it is actually a rebirth. This latest language being suggested is a result of trying to incorporate substantial key issues being raised to the suggested language. So the first on the point about reference to the ASO MOU, I see that there still are some concerns being expressed in the course of CCWG discussions. I think I've already seen the latest post from Caboose, for example, who remains opposed to reference to the ASO MOU. So this is now removed. And the other part of the language is basically reflecting the feedback from the CCWG lawyers on their request to remove the word ratification and replace with implementation. We felt that this suggested language did not quite capture what is actually being implemented and ratified. So instead of ratifying, we try to explain ICANN's role in terms of the approval of the global number resources policy, which is in point two of the language that I've shared. And then in terms of implementation, we try to explain ICANN's role in terms of its number resources registration services. So that's basically the intention, and as I mentioned at the beginning, it may appear as though we're coming up with something totally new. It's as a result of trying to incorporate the key issues being raised, and we're trying to reach a point that can be agreed by the CCWG. So that's all for me, and I would be interested to hear any feedback.
Thanks very much, Izumi. Any comments on that? So for those who are not using or making use of their scroll control, we're looking at page 10 of the document, and Izumi has just spoken to the text highlighted in blue, and it looks like Izumi's suggested text does get traction.
It's fine. That's good. You need to work to a level.
Let me ask if there are any objections to replacing the text in yellow by the text in blue. And if that weren't the case, then I suggest that we note that there is no opposition to this new text. Chris has indicated in the chat that the board needs to take a look at that and comment ASAP. And Chris, just as an encouragement, your comment might just be thumbs up. It can be as easy as that. And in the absence of further comment or objection, let's assume that this is our new new language for this paragraph, and we're going to take it to second reading in due course. So that's been a good discussion. Thanks so much. Becky, let's move to the next item.
Okay, thanks. The next items are item six, which is the regulatory language, and item seven, which is the grandfathering language. I'd like to suggest that we talk a little, that we reverse the order of these things and start with grandfathering, the grandfathering language first. In order to sort of move this, hopefully move this discussion forward, one of the big issues with grandfathering is, can the contracts with PICs in them be renewed without change, and can new contracts that are not executed yet with existing registry applicants contain PICs going forward? Now, I am mindful that the PICs process sort of permitted registry applicants to include lots of their own language, but at least with respect to the standard, it seems to me that a more meaningful way of looking at this is to think about the standard PICs commitments in specification 11, and understand whether the CCWG is content that those provisions can continue to be put in new GTLD agreements, and agreements containing those commitments can be renewed without change. So I guess the question I have is, do we have any discussion on that? Is there any objection to ensuring that the PICs and the registry agreements as they stand now, and the including the PICs, can be renewed without change, and that new GTLD applicants in the round that has completed, but where not all agreements have been signed, can enter into those?
I guess, Becky, we should have that discussion.
Yes.
Let's try to keep it relatively brief, so I'd like to, the speakers to be as concise as possible. Ellen.
Thank you very much. I think the answer is relatively simple. The current round of GTLDs allows for PICs, both specified ones, some that apply to everyone, some that apply to only some TLDs in response to the GAC Beijing communique on sensitive TLDs, and some that are specified by the registry in their application or following their application. PICs didn't exist at the time of the application. I think if we say that they can go poof and disappear because a contract is renewed, even if some other clause in the contract changes, but if the PICs aren't changing, then it has to be able to continue. Otherwise, we're not fulfilling our commitment to the market, to the registrant, if no one else, to maintain the rules that were under which the TLD was deployed. And the same applies for contracts that are not yet signed. We can't say that just because we have some new bylaws in place that we suddenly have a completely uneven playing field, that some disputed TLDs that were delayed for various reasons, when they finally signed, that don't have the same rules apply. So I think we have to take into account the TLDs that aren't signed yet, and I believe we must continue renewing ad infinitum as long as we're not changing those specific terms that we're grandfathering. Otherwise, we end up with a market where the rules are changing, and I don't think that's acceptable. That's not not the way that we deployed these TLDs, and I don't think we can make changes after the fact like that. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I think we need to remind ourselves that the question in front of us now is whether there's any objection to allowing for existing contracts to be renewed. So that's the first thing. Let's talk about the possibility to enter into contracts with applicants that haven't yet signed afterwards, but I think the only way for us to really make progress is by slicing and dicing the discussion. So I'd only like to hear or read from those who do object or have an issue with allowing for existing contracts, including PICs, to be renewed. So let's move to, I think it's Chris who is next. Chris, if you wanted to speak to another topic, just indicate so, and you can remain in the queue.
I thought it was Greg that was next.
I'm sorry. Again, my device doesn't really show the order properly. Greg, please.
Hi, Greg Chatton. Thanks. Thanks, Chris. I object, but not for the reason that they shouldn't be renewed. I object on the ground that it should not be a question of whether grandfathering is required to allow the renewal of these PICs. That assumes that but for the grandfathering, all of these PICs would be out of scope and unrenewable. And I think that's assuming fact, not in evidence. I know that we've circled around this question more than once. I think Becky got us closer, at least by putting up the standard PICs. And I think that the discussion there indicated that at least all but one PIC was kind of safely within any definition of the mission. So I think by putting this under grandfathering, we're confusing the issue and confusing the scope of the mission, which is critical to a successful outcome in this in our exercise here. And I should say that not confusing the scope of the mission but clarifying it is critical to a successful outcome. So using grandfathering, broadly to kind of save us from looking at things is kind of cheating, if you will. I think grandfathering should only apply to those things that require grandfathering. And if we are not sure whether something requires grandfathering or not, we have to ask that question. We can't just use grandfathering as some sort of all-purpose way of not defining the scope and of the mission. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Chris?
Thanks, Thomas. The board has some comments already and will inform those in a note soon after this call, but I just wanted to pick up on two things. We do have concerns about grandfathering. We have concerns about treating people equally. We have concerns that something that's previously been allowed wouldn't be allowed in the future and so on. And so we do have some issues with that, and we also want to make sure that wherever we end up, and I'm not sure that this is necessarily specific to the topic we're on right now, but since I've got the microphone, we also say that we need to ensure that wherever we end up, we retain the power to contract and enforce. And that applies regarding current PICs, which are contractually binding. We obviously need to be able to support those. But some more detail and perhaps easier to understand the concern if we put it in writing very shortly. Thanks. And just to acknowledge Becky saying in the chat that that's already in the language. I'm assuming that you're referring, Becky, to the enforcement bit, and that's fine. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Next is, I think, Becky.
So I just want to say I think that the grandfathering language, which is in the
direction to drafters does say specifically for the avoidance of doubt, and that it should be understood that there is no presumption that things that are grandfathered and are outside of that. And if we say we're grandfathering the existing the language of the existing agreements, including the PICs, I don't see how anybody could possibly make the assumption that that means that the existing agreements are not in that language. That said, I frankly, you know, personally wouldn't, you know, wanted to have the discussion about the existing PICs precisely because I think that, in fact, there really isn't very much of a debate about the existing standard PICs, with the exception of the one, the very last one that goes to closed generics, which I think is problematic in the absence of a policy supporting that, and indeed in the face of policy that that suggested that closed generics would be okay. So I understand what Greg is saying, but I just, I mean, if we're going to get through this efficiently, you know, the notion of the grandfathering was to grandfather language for the existing GTLD round, existing contracts. Presumably, you know, all bets are off for the next round, and policy needs to get developed on the registry agreement there. But I don't think that we're going to be able to move forward in a timely fashion if what we want to, if we want to either eliminate the concept of grandfathering or go through each and every provision and decide whether it is or is not within ICANN's mission.
Thanks, Becky. Last speaker on this topic is Malcolm.
Thank you, Thomas. I don't believe that anything that we've done has changed ICANN's mission. All we're doing is clarifying it and making it so that it's possible to hold out ICANN accountable to it. But there are some people that fear that ICANN has already, in signing some PICs, acted in a way that was really outside what it should have done, outside its mission, and that when there, but that it was never possible to hold it to account for that. And that when it is possible to hold it to account, then we may find that some of the existing PICs on which people have expected to be people to be bound by might no longer be enforceable, and that that would be disruptive. And the grandfathering clause seeks to address that by preferring to avoid the disruption over holding ICANN strictly to the limited mission, to say, well, for those things which you've done already, we'll put that beyond doubt so that nobody can argue, and it's not open to anyone to argue that that's outside the mission. That is regardless going to be acceptable for the avoidance of the disruption that would have caused the challenge things that are already in place. So if that's the principle, the avoidance of disruption, then I think we need to apply the grandfathering clause according to where it is necessary to avoid disruption to what we've done already. So with that, I think on that basis, I think it would be fair to say that any PIC which has already been offered, even if it hasn't been signed, could be something that it might be disruptive to the existing process that we are in the process of going through of this current round, if we were to say that those that some of those PICs were potentially open to challenge. So I think what we could say is that the grandfathering clause will put beyond doubt anything that as of essentially this date has already been proposed, and that that will continue until such time as the board determines that cancelling it is no longer disruptive to the established order. You know, the board is obviously always able to cancel a contract and could indeed cancel the a PIC once they if they put in place some alternative arrangement to satisfy it. But it may be that no alternative arrangement has ever arrived at, and they'd have to be renewed. And in that case, I think the PIC could be renewed indefinitely, again on the principle of the avoidance of disruption, as long as that was necessary, but not added to, not extended, no new PICs or changes to those PICs would be added, but the same thing could continue in force essentially indefinitely, all until such earlier time as an appropriate mechanism satisfactory to the board is arrived at. Hello?
Both Greg and Caruso's hand have been raised after I had closed the queue, so I would ask for your understanding that we move to the next sub-question. The way I understand the discussion now is that we're very close to a compromise, and I would suggest that instead of discussing this in the plenary now, we ask Becky to update the draft accordingly and refine on the list so that we can take it to last reading in front of the group during the next call when we bring this up. The next sub-question was whether applicants that are to sign contracts with PICs in them shall be allowed to do so. So does anyone object to that notion? I'm not sure whether Greg and Caruso want to speak to that. Greg?
Just briefly, I offered a solution in the chat to the problem of overextending PICs, and just to say that to the extent that, for instance, PICs may be found to be out of scope, then those PICs are grandfathered in. I think that solves the problem of false grandfathering.
Thanks, Greg. And just to be clear, I may not have been outspoken enough, but I was thinking exactly of this conversation that you had with Becky. I would only ask Becky to incorporate that addition to the document. Then I think we have something that we can confirm as agreed during the next call. Caruso?
I think we are not lucky tonight. Everything we have, there are some people constantly and systematically opposed to everything. I don't think that is correct. Grandfathering existed in all constitution, convention, agreement, and charter. Whenever an issue is under a regime, and that issue need to continue on the existing regime, whenever the new regime is provided or is applied, that is grandfathered. I don't understand some people saying that grandfathering is black market or black and so on and so forth. This has existed until the time that the grandfathering is waived. I don't understand this argument. This is not effective. This is not productive that somebody opposing to every point. Thank you.
Thanks, Caruso. And I'm afraid I can't confirm this impression, because I do think that we do have a solution and that there was no fundamental opposition to the notion of grandfathering, but that we just have a demarcation inserted between those contracts that really need grandfathering and others that don't. So I think with the addition suggested, and that is getting a lot of traction in the chat, we do have a solution for that point, and maybe we can bring that up in the notes section so that we can read it out for everyone's benefit after we went to the second question, the sub-question on whether contracts that are yet to be signed and that include PICs should be allowed for. Any objections to that? I have seen two or three statements in favor of allowing that, i.e. Not objecting to allowing for that grandfathering. And I should say with the same caveat there that Greg mentioned. And those who are not speaking, please do mute your microphone. We hear some typing in the background. Malcolm.
no objection to the grandfathering of PICs that have not been signed that have been submitted, but we shouldn't be inviting people to rush to put in PICs that are dubious post this point. So I would say that PICs that have already been submitted but not signed should be grandfathered, but PICs that have not yet been submitted should not be. Thank you.
Malcolm, do you have a practical suggestion on how to fix that?
I think that can be given as a direction to the lawyers, but essentially PICs already received, but not even if not executed, as of essentially this date, as of, you know, 1st January 2016, whatever, would do anything like that. If you want exact wording from me, I can offer it on the mailing list. That'd be easier.
So let's see where the discussion goes for the moment. But thanks for the offer, Malcolm. Let's hear Alan and then Chris.
Thank you. I'm not an expert on the contracting process for new GTLDs. There are a number that are on hold or in various stages of not yet being signed. It is possible, but I may be incorrect completely, that one of the ways of getting something out of hold to resolve the problem that is perceived is for the registry to volunteer a new PIC, which could resolve the dispute that's currently or the problem that's currently there. I don't know if that's the case, but if it is, we do not want to prohibit that. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Chris?
Thanks, Thomas. Just speaking personally, with, and again with my lawyers, if I just heard correctly from Malcolm, I think it's problematic to start to try and interfere with ongoing contractual processes on the basis of something that hasn't been made in bylaws, hasn't been signed, hasn't been agreed by NTIA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I, leaving aside any feelings about grandfathering generally, I don't see how you can make the recommendation and expect it to be dealt with, you know, from a previous date.
Thanks. I have to confess I also have issues with trying to interfere with the queue of contracts to be signed at this stage. Malcolm, you want to get back on that?
Yes, exactly. I mean, that, avoiding interfering with that queue was exactly what I was proposing. We clearly can't be grandfathering in things that haven't even been suggested yet. It's not possible to grandfather in something that doesn't even exist. But any document that has already been submitted by an applicant, if ICANN should choose to accept it, then that, under the grandfathering provision, would be immune to challenge under the grandfathering clause. Now, that, of course, doesn't create any obligation on ICANN to accept such an offer. ICANN can choose not to. It in no way interferes with that. We are just simply limiting the ability to challenge an offer that's already been made on the grounds that it's out of scope if it's been received by this date. That's a perfectly normal procedure to do. As Cavus says, this happens in many cases. I don't see that really there's any possible reason to challenge that on the ground that it's not normal or anything like that. This would be a perfectly reasonable thing to do.
Thanks, Malcolm. And being conscious of time, we need to close this topic in the next few seconds, basically. I would suggest that we come up with a revised language capturing what's been said here, particularly Greg's suggested language, and further discuss this on the list. Becky, during her introduction, mentioned a couple of questions with respect to the issue of grandfathering, and we would suggest that we come up with proposed answers so that the group can confirm its agreement with this or raise a position so that we can probably come to a solution very soon. And let me just go on record stating or confirming that I've seen the concerns expressed on the list, for example, by Robin, and we will certainly take that into account when suggesting how to move on. Becky, we should take very few minutes, 5 minutes max, to give an update and discuss the contract enforcement issue. So maybe you would like to give a quick intro on where we are with that issue.
Okay, so my understanding is that we have broad agreement that ICANN, as part of its mission, has authority to enter into and enforce agreements with contracted parties in service of its mission. That's the language that we have discussed at great length, and I don't believe anybody objects to that language. The language that the ICANN board has objected to is language that says ICANN shall not regulate services that use the Internet's unique identifiers or the content they offer or carry. The board has objected to that language on the grounds that that while it agrees ICANN is not a regulator, that the language itself is not appropriate in bylaws, and the ICANN board has proposed instead that that specific provision be included, if I understand the board's proposal, was that that specific language be moved into the drafting notes so that it is taken into consideration and accounted for by the folks drafting the final bylaws for our consideration, but that be reflected, that be a principle that gets reflected in the bylaws as opposed to a sort of specific tenet of the bylaws.
Thanks very much, Becky. I don't see any hands raised, so Malcolm?
Okay, I'm a little confused as to what's being suggested there. Perhaps Becky could clarify
I wasn't really suggesting anything. I think that the situation is that while most of the commenters on the third draft proposal supported the language that says ICANN shall not regulate services that use the Internet's unique identifiers or the content they carry, that the board objected to that language as a bylaw provision and urged us to include it rather in the note to drafters so that the overall concept would be reflected by the drafters of the bylaws language as opposed to having it as a specific provision in the bylaws itself. And that was not a suggestion or proposal, Malcolm, but an articulation of what I believe the current status of this issue is.
Okay, but it's that last bit that I'm confused about. It's if the board is proposing that this not be included as a specific provision of the bylaws, but instead it be written as a guidance to the people drafting the bylaws language, but guidance to do what? Guidance to create something else that would be a specific proposal that would reflect this principle. If so, I can agree with that. If not, I don't know what it is being proposed. What's being proposed? If the board is saying, well, even though
there was an overwhelming majority of people that supported this language. They still wanted out and nothing to go in its place. Well, then I wouldn't agree with that. I'd go with the overwhelming majority of people.
Greg is next in line, and since we have a couple of board members on the call, maybe one of them would care to clarify that point. Greg?
Thanks. It's Greg Shatton. I think this is actually emblematic of a larger problem in the approach of our proposal, which I actually had some discussion within members of my constituency who have not been following this as closely as those on this phone, which is we say that the so-called bylaws language that we have prepared is not the final language. We're only amateur bylaws drafters, even if you know some of us are lawyers, and that we're going to turn these so-called bylaw drafts over to our council and have them turned into more proper and appropriate drafting, but carrying through the concepts. And then we also have these notes to drafters in a couple of places, particularly here. But what is unclear is the weight that that our council needs to give to what we've called the bylaw language versus the weight that's given to the drafting notes. If there's no difference between our kind of amateur attempts to express ourselves in bylaw language and our attempts to express ourselves in non-bylaw language, then the board's point is really not a point at all. If, however, there is a considerably greater amount of deference that needs to be given to our draft bylaws, indeed, if the final bylaws are really supposed to look like our draft bylaws as much as humanly possible, unless we just, screwed up from a point of view of proper legal drafting, then the board at least has a point. I'm not sure if I agree with it, but it's a point. And the reason I framed this in the context of speaking to people, other than than those of us who are drenched in this stuff, is that people who are looking at this, only look at the three proposals, for instance, and not at everything in between. They look at what we call our draft bylaw language, and they think that's actually proposed bylaw language. They think it's actually what's going to appear in the bylaws, subject to maybe some very, very minor tweaks, and not that it is just basically, an expression of hope as to what a bylaw, might carry out, even if it doesn't actually use that language. And I think that I know, in a sense, it's probably too late to clarify, to change our approach on that. But I think we may need to clarify more clearly that what we call a draft bylaw is really no more than an instruction to the drafters that is in the form of a draft bylaw, because that's kind of how we started before we realized that we couldn't finish drafting bylaws by ourselves. Now, if people disagree and think that the draft bylaws really are kind of pretty final, and that the bylaw and the notes are less important, then I think we need to consider that. But trying to convince people that language problems in the draft bylaws shouldn't be dealt with as long as the intent is clear, doesn't work if you tell people that this is actually the language people are going to have to deal with. So I think we need to figure out how we're working with all of these, so-called draft bylaws and notes. And that's not just the notes to drafters. It's really the whole recommendations around the bylaws, the extent to which those will be taken into account. If everything in our recommendations is equal and fair game for our council, then, we can just talk about concepts and not worry about where those concepts are placed. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I would like to briefly respond that we made it clear in our report that the language that we're putting in there is subject to, drafting work by lawyers doing the bylaws. So I think the reports that we put out there are clear on that. Also, we do have an implementation oversight team that shall ensure that that what we're doing is in line with the spirit of our recommendations. So I'm not sure I agree with the notion of expressions of hope in our report. I think you know, that's maybe a little bit too sloppy for describing what we've been working on for more than a year now. Becky?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think that's an old hand.
Okay, thank you. I think that what I'm hearing is that we might need to work a little bit more on capturing what we're trying to express here, but that this can also be done during the implementation by way of giving direction to those that are coming up with the final language. So, Becky, in concluding this agenda item, let me thank you for a certain job, as always, and let's try to continue the conversation on the list and bring it to a close very soon. With that, I think we should move to the next agenda item. And if I'm not mistaken, the next agenda item is the discussion on AOC reviews, and that was ably taken care of by Steve Zerbianco. We've done a first reading on that a week ago, and we're now going to do a second reading, but there are a few more remarks, Steve, that you wanted to make, right?
Yes, Thomas, thank you. So on the Adobe is Annex 9, that's the incorporation of the affirmation of commitments pursuant to Stress Test 14. We circulated the document you have in front of you on the 20th of January. There were no list comments received as of the beginning of this call from members. Our lawyers, however, gave us two comments on the 24th of January, Sunday. I'll paste those quickly into the chat and see if we can dispose of those. The first was, our lawyers suggested we try to define what diversity means. And that's in paragraph 54 of the document you have in front of you, wherein we describe how the chairs of the ACs and SOs would select the members of the review teams based on considerations of skills and diversity. To reply to that, I did want to suggest that diversity itself is defined two times in our comments, in our draft three, and we didn't define diversity. We just mentioned diversity in our third draft. And then it's 12 times in ICANN's bylaws today. The word diversity appears 12 times in the bylaws today. It's mostly with respect to the board of directors. And in a couple of instances, the bylaws ask for cultural and geographic diversity. In one other instance, it talks about a diversity of skills. And finally, for the NOMCOM's selection of directors, it suggests that the geographical region diversity. So it's true that there are times that the word diversity is preceded by the kinds of diversity sought, skills or geographical. But our intent, and the drafting team that came up with this, our intent was that the diversity would be at the discretion of and the judgment of the group of chairs of the ACs and SOs. And those are the chairs that will take these nominations from each of the ACs and SOs and select up to three from each AC and SO, and that selection is supposed to be one that's based on diversity and skills. That does not require that they pick 21. It's up to 21, and not every AC and SO has to get three. They may choose to only want one or two, and in those cases, additional slots in the 21 could be allocated to the other ACs and SOs. So my view on this is that diversity does not need to be defined, since we haven't defined it in the bylaws or elsewhere in our proposal. And it doesn't have to be constrained to say it's geographic or cultural diversity. There may be other considerations of diversity, such as gender, a diversity of views in the ACs and SOs. And I don't really believe, you know, with all respect, and I appreciate our lawyer's suggestion, but I don't believe we need to define it. Thomas, back to you to see whether you want to have further discussion on that, and then I can do the second item from our lawyers.
Thanks, Steve. I suggest that we ask the group for objections to sticking to what we have in there, and I understand that this was your your recommendation on how to deal with it. I see Rinalia's hand is up, so Rinalia, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Thomas. I actually would like to convey board response regarding recommendation 9. So if Steve would like to finish the issues that he wants to raise, then I can go after.
Thanks, Rinalia. So Steve, I see support for your suggestion in the chat. I haven't seen opposition to that. So we should deem your suggestion as accepted. But before moving to the second item, I see that Sebastian and Greg have raised their hands too. Sebastian goes first.
Yes, thank you, Thomas. I just remind you that we have something on this issue on the work stream too, then I guess I will support what Steve suggests, and if something happened during the work stream to work, it will be time to revise it if necessary. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sebastian. Greg, if I could ask you to keep it brief, your last intervention was quite excessive.
Excessive? Well, pardon me. briefly, I think that, you know, diversity is a worthy goal, but I think as I think Jonathan actually said it better in the chat, so I'm just going to say what he said, which is the kind of diversity we need for review teams has got to be substantive, not arbitrary. And, you know, counting, there, you know, it depends. We really need to look at what kind of things we are counting. I'm not saying that we should define diversity here, but I think the language has to balanced for diversity and skills seems to be fairly a lot like a requirement, and I think there needs to be more of an encouragement than a requirement. You know, getting the right people in there, even if 7 of them happen to be from Uruguay, you know, should be what's important. You know, rather than trying to balance redheads and left-handers and the like. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Greg. Let's then move to Steve's second point, please.
Thank you, Thomas. So now I'm going to discuss the second of the two recommendations made by our lawyers on Sunday regarding Annex 9. Their second one is just pasted into the chat. They suggested to state regarding paragraph 54, and what I would do is invite each of you to scroll to paragraph 54, which is describing the composition of review teams. It's on page 9 of the document that you have there. So looking at that, our lawyers suggested that the group of the chairs can look for additional nominees or appoint less than 21 to avoid potential overrepresentation if some nominate less than 3. In fact, the recommendation we have is up to 21. It does not require 21 at all, and it does give discretion of the chairs to allocate some of the unwanted seats by an AC and SO for other ACs and SOs who may have a greater stake in the outcome. So Rosemary and Holly may not have been aware of this, but two of the reviews regard only the GTLD space. And so it's highly unlikely that we wouldn't have seen much demand for 3 review team members from, say, the ASO or the CCNSO for something that affects WHOIS services that affect only the GTLD space. That's just an example, and I realize the numbering community may suddenly become really interested in the next round of GTLDs or WHOIS. But the flexibility that's there on paragraph 54 actually is intended to allow representation that's proportional to the level of interest that's shown from ACs and SOs, while still guaranteeing that each of the ACs and SOs has the opportunity to get 3 times 7 or 21, up to 21. So I don't think we need to make a change for this, since your notion of overrepresentation may well be intentional and discretionary at the part of the chairs based on the demand that's shown. And we have never intended that it had to be 21 members. It can be less. So, Thomas, I'll put it back to you, but it's my belief that we don't make any change pursuant to our lawyer's advice on this one either. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. You're receiving a green tick from Cheryl. And let's see whether there are more comments on that point. Otherwise, I would suggest that we also follow your recommendation on that point. And that allows us to move to Rinalia to speak to the board's response to this.
Thank you, Thomas. Let me start by reiterating the board's support for incorporating AOC reviews into the bylaws. In our comments on the third draft proposal, we noted the importance of maintaining operational standards for reviews outside of the bylaws. While we agree that operational standards should be in alignment with the provisions of the bylaws, we view operational standards as a more suitable place to address review-related operational items that we feel do not belong in bylaws. So there are a few specific areas that the board is flagging in relation to the operational standards themselves. First, the board is concerned about potential constraints that may limit flexibility and effectiveness in the operational standards, and that certain CCWG accountability recommendations may not be aligned with best practices or industry standards. And I'm going to highlight the examples. Fixed numbers of total review team members, as well as a fixed allocation among SOACs without consideration of specific issues and required expertise for a given review. Second, unlimited number of participants in addition to the appointed review team members, potentially affecting the team's productivity. And third, exact trigger points for the commencement of reviews without taking into account the community bandwidth or the state of pending implementation activities. Now, on the number of review team members, to accommodate differing needs of reviews, the board recommends leaving the number of review team members to the selectors of a specific review team, as opposed to prescribing a specific formula for composition. This could leave to the selectors the flexibility, for example, to include more members from a specific SO or AC that is more impacted by a specific review, without hard-coding numbers into the bylaws that might need to be changed later. And the board is concerned with the CCWG accountability's recommendations on determinations of how consensus is applied. Imposing bylaws requirements and allowing participants and observers or requiring consensus calls are other examples where trying to hard code specific requirements for reviews now might actually develop reviews that are less efficient, more resource intensive, and detract from the responsibilities of the review team. What we say is that keep it out of the bylaws, focus on the operational standards, and be aware of the constraints and its impact on the review itself. Now, the board notes that the ICANN community would benefit from a review schedule that would take into consideration community bandwidth and ICANN resources in developing a staggered or phased review schedule. We feel that these factors should be
Rinalia?
Yes?
Rinalia, this is Thomas. Yes? I'm sorry for cutting across you. We have 7 minutes to the top of the hour, and this three-hour call. It sounds like you're reading the board's comment to us. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm sharing it with you.
Okay. May I suggest that we take the board's comment to the notes to this call, so that it's on record, and we're going to bring that back during the subsequent call, so that everybody gets a chance to read through it, and we will. Respond to the board's comments on the list in the meantime. Is that an acceptable way forward?
Yes, it's acceptable.
Thanks very much for your understanding, Rinalia. Steve, I think that with respect to the two points that were needed to discuss, we have confirmed with the group that there's no objection to your suggestions. So I suggest that we put that in writing and put it out to the group as the new consensus position. And with that, I'd like to thank you again, Steve, for taking such good care of this topic. and I'd like to hand over to Mathieu for the next agenda item.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And we're 2 hours and 54 minutes into this call and coming to a sort of a second reading on the timeline and next steps, so I won't bore you with a lot of details. You've probably observed on the list the number of exchanges about finalizing the various recommendations. You will observe that track changes are available, as well as all the legal inputs we are receiving for everyone to see. I think we have already concluded on the pilot testing on the process for a couple of recommendations. I think the exchange with the lawyers have been very fruitful in clarifying our text. There were no very substantial issue raised that we would have to further discuss, but that may not be the case in the future. So we are, I think, in a position to move forward with this process, and I would suggest and ask for your confirmation that we can keep going this way on the route to finalizing our processes, our recommendations. Focus our energy at the same time in the plenary sessions on finalizing the last remaining issues, because we still have a few gaps to address. Thanks to the GNSO and GACI inputs, we are now in a position to discuss them all. And I think we really need to focus our energy on that now. It's still a little bit early because there's still some uncertainty about those gaps. To provide actual delivery dates, I would say that we probably the level of confidence that we can deliver a supplemental draft during the months of February is raising, but there are still challenges ahead. I think that should be, for the moment, enough to proceed forward with the process we had described during the last meeting to finalize our recommendations. And hopefully by the end of the Thursday meeting, we'll have better view of estimated time to conclude so that we can make progress on the dates. And I think with that, I would like to just check that there's no objection to keeping this track changes transparency on the list and moving forward. So that everyone is comfortable with the way we are undertaking the finalization of the recommendations. And I'm seeing none. Some would say that it's agreement by exhaustion, but that might be excessive to say that. I don't know if that translates. I think with that we'll move on with this process and obviously keep assessing what our next steps are. Next agenda item is the AOB, and I'd like to check whether there's any AOB from the group. No AOBs. Leon, would you like to provide us with any other business?
Thank you very much, Mathieu. No, I think that you've called for any other business. I see no hands showing on, so I think we don't have any other business, Mathieu.
Well, thank you for joining us. I know you had another meeting at the same time, we made some good progress. It's sometimes a little bit slow, and I think I would take Andrew's point that the more we can achieve on list, the more efficient our calls will be. So I would certainly encourage that we focus the mailing list discussion on the substantial issues and trying to move them forward. in a constructive manner. I think that's the key for our ability to close the remaining discussions. And with that, I thank you. I thank everyone, the rapporteurs, the staff also, because it's a tremendous task they're undertaking at this point. And I'm not only speaking about the notes for the three-hour call, but also all the recommendations to be finalized. Thanks also to our lawyers who are providing us with very timely feedback and extremely useful insights, and for the board, who is which is actually keeping the pace of providing us timely feedback on a recommendation by recommendation basis, which is immensely useful, and we really appreciate that. And with that, it's the top of the hour, so I would say talk to you very, very soon. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.